From NPR News, I'm Tony Cox. On today's program, in a party that is increasingly conservative, he is perhaps the most moderate Republican voice in the U.S. Senate. We'll talk to Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island about towing the party line and stepping on some toes in the process. Also, author Paul Loeb reminds us to enjoy this season of hope and to remember that, as his book says, the impossible will take a little while. And finally, a take two of our Friday comedy segment with actress-comedian Aisha Tyler. But first, a look at some of the week's top headlines in Reporters Roundtable. President Bush wraps his two-day economic summit, and some argue it was less a summit than an exercise in post-election spin. Michigan Congressman John Conyers asked the FBI to investigate allegations of election fraud in Ohio. Is this the tip of the iceberg or just sour grapes? And only a month from now, Iraq is scheduled to hold elections, but will the Bush administration like who they choose? Plus, does Donald Rumsfeld have the armor to survive the latest political firestorm? Here to help us sort through the headlines are Sam Fulwood III, a columnist with The Plain Dealer in Cleveland, Ohio, and author of the book, Full of It, Strong Words and Fresh Thinking for Cleveland. Sam, nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Tony.
And Callie Crossley, a Boston-based social-cultural commentator who appears weekly on the media criticism show Beat the Press. Callie, nice to have you back as well.
Hey, Tony.
You're up first, Callie. During his economic summit this week, the president reiterated his intent to privatize Social Security, which would require the government to borrow upwards of $2 to $3 trillion. Couple that with making the tax cuts permanent. Are the president's promises to cut the deficit realistic, and is Social Security even in as bad a shape as he would like us to believe?
Well, some of the experts have said Social Security is not in as bad a shape as President Bush has indicated, though in less than 20 years, we will get to a point where we have to start thinking about some hard choices. So in anticipation of that, I think it's appropriate to think about how that program needs to change in these times. After all, it's been some decades in its current form. Having said that, 60% of folks polled in a new poll by the Wall Street Journal indicate that privatizing Social Security, at least to the extent of setting up those private accounts for young people, is not the way they want to see President Bush go. And that's a key component of his proposed changes to the system. I think, lastly, that people really are not focusing on how much the deficit has grown. And in fact, there are conservative voices, not the liberal folks, the conservative voices saying this is not appropriate to, in a way, for a conservative, or certainly a Republican, to handle federal tax cuts and the budget deficit. So we're looking at a deficit that's going to be more than $400 billion by the end of this year, and conservatives saying this is not the way to go, that in fact they're claiming that President Bush is practicing what some have called big government conservatism, which is keep on spending and then cut very little on some social, some military programs in favor of bleeding out the social programs, but the spending keeps going.
Let me bring Sam in on this. As a forum for ordinary people, and those are the president's words, Sam, there were an awful lot of CEOs and MBAs at the White House Economic Summit with session titles like Tax and Regulatory Burdens and the High Cost of Lawsuit Abuse. Was there any room for dissenting opinions? We didn't hear any, did we?
No, and it wasn't intended to be dissenting. This was a pre-inaugural prep rally for the president. It was a situation where the president wanted to try to rally support for his domestic agenda, which is going to be heavy on restructuring the tax code and getting the Social Security thing through. And these were all his buddies. These were all the CEOs and the folks who helped finance and push his campaign. And he's, on one hand, maybe he's paying them back. On another, he's sort of trying to show that he has support for a domestic agenda that a lot of people are worried that whether the ordinary folks, the little folks, the average taxpayers don't necessarily understand or following or focused on, so that if he can get sort of momentum going, I think the thinking is that he might be able to put some pressure on Congress to pass some of his proposals.
Let's move on to the allegations of election fraud in Ohio. I'm going to double back to you, Sam, since you're there in the Buckeye State. One of the things that's been interesting about this story is the fact that at first, when several of the election's independent parties called for a recount, Kerry and the Democrats stayed on the down low, but now with Congressman Conyers involving the FBI, the dynamic seems to be changing. In Ohio, seems like this is the election that just won't go away, Sam.
It's over, and it has gone away. But what we have is a situation where, the election ended whenever John Kerry refused to continue the fight. So at that point, it was all practically done and see it. But what we have is a situation where there is some political hay to be made for the Democrats to not appear to be buckling. That was the big complaint 4 years ago, right after Al Gore quickly, if you consider all of the ramifications after the 2000 election, and decided he wasn't going to fight anymore when there were still people urging him to fight. John Conyers of Michigan has picked up that banner and has said we're not going to give up on anything, although conceding that probably it won't change anything, but we're going to really make sure that everybody's vote has been counted. In Ohio yesterday, at least in Cuyahoga County, surrounding Cleveland, where I am, there were groups of people watching as the voters started checking ballots. Nothing changed in all of this, and it's going to take them a couple days more to continue this process. But as the voting recount goes, because it's a privately funded sort of thing, it's going to keep the issue alive. It allows people like John Conyers and Jesse Jackson to continue the fight.
We are speaking of Ohio, Callie. One of the firms, this is on another subject, also Ohio related, one of the firms that armors Humvees, O'Gara, Hess, and Eisenhart, is based in Fairfield, Ohio. Now, after Secretary Rumsfeld recently suggested that vehicles were being armored as quickly as possible, that company, among others, publicly refuted his claim. Now, today, as the National Guard is asking for $20 billion for arms and gear and the complaints are continuing, now you can add Evan Bayh's name to the list of senators, including John McCain and Trent Lott, who say they have no confidence in Rumsfeld. But how likely do you think Bush is to act on these complaints against the secretary, if at all?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I think it depends on how much he just wants to plant his feet firmly and say, this is my guy, and I'm going to stick with him, and we'll just wait this out. But I got to say that when you start getting those voices, in addition to Bill Kristol, who is an editor of a conservative publication, writing an op-ed that says the guy's got to go, that says to me that a lot of people feel comfortable to come out from under behind the back of John McCain, if you will. John McCain's going to stand up anyway. But then here are these other people that might not have said anything if he hadn't been one of the folks speaking out and feel comfortable to criticize Rumsfeld. It just doesn't look good. I think it just depends on how stubborn the president wants to be. Or maybe if Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld realizes by folks talking to him behind the scene that he's become the problem as opposed to anything else.
But let me
actually, there's a bigger picture here, too.
Go ahead, Sam.
Rumsfeld represents sort of the human face in the policy of the failure of the war from the beginning. This was a poorly designed war to keep the peace, and Rumsfeld has been the most aggressive advocate for how to do that with the minimal government with the minimal troops over there and the not sending reinforcements in the whole bit. As this thing falls apart, as it is falling apart, Rumsfeld is going to be the person who will be seen as the personification of the failure.
But I think that's absolutely correct. And then it becomes, is that a referendum on the war itself? For a lot of folks who keep asking the question, is this worth it?
Yeah, but doesn't he have to stay? Doesn't Rumsfeld have to stay with the president? Or put it in reverse, doesn't the president have to stay with Rumsfeld at least through the elections in January in Iraq if they happen as scheduled, Sam?
Well, that's not very far off, and maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. All of that has to do with whether the public becomes more and more angry about the course of the war. The president survived the election with a lot of people doubting whether the war was a good thing. Now he has to really try to be able to do something in this country, and he's trying to push his domestic agenda. He can't have folks questioning the war while he's trying to create a legacy in a second term.
I think Sam is right in that it's a short distance away, but I got to say, if, let's say, Rumsfeld goes out before the elections, then you've got this nobody's at the helm thing happening, And that doesn't look good either.
I want to duck one more subject in here before we end Reporters Roundtable for the week. I'm going to come to you first, Callie. We've got a couple of minutes to talk about it. Before we go, to get your opinion on Bernard Kerik's meteoric rise and meteoric fall, as it were, as President Bush's Secretary of Homeland Security nominee. Is this failed appointment simply a matter of some sloppy vetting by the White House, or is it something more?
Well, I think it's absolutely sloppy vetting by the White House, but it also speaks to the influence by certain folks close to the president. I think the fact that he had the hand of Rudy Giuliani on him made people just say, okay, well, he's a great guy, so we don't really have to worry about it. And then early on, if you remember, some Democrats, like Chuck Schumer, came out and said, gee, I think he's a good guy and he should be able to be approved rather quickly. So I think it was sloppy, but it also says that there are some folk who have a definite Bigfoot when it comes to influence in the White House.
Sam, we have about a minute left. Who looks worse in a situation like this? The president, obviously Kerik looks bad, but the president or Giuliani?
Oh, I think this really is a setback for Giuliani. I think the president is going to shrug his shoulder and point fingers at other people and move on. I mean, he was quickly saying, we're moving on. Giuliani is the person. This was Giuliani's boy. And it redounds on his credibility to be able to have influence in this White House. I think that's the loser in this one.
All right. Sam Fullwood III, a columnist with The Plain Dealer in Cleveland, Ohio, and author of the book Full of It, Strong Words and Fresh Thinking for Cleveland. Callie Crossley, a Boston-based social-cultural commentator who appears weekly on the media criticism show Beat the Press. Thank you both once again for being on Reporters Roundtable.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you.